Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet the recently named park director for The Gathering Place, now under construction along Riverside Drive. Tony Moore comes to Tulsa from Tampa, Florida, where he was the chief operating officer of the Lowry Park Zoo. Prior to that, he's worked for over 30 years in park operations, environmental, health and safety, culinary operation and marketing for a variety of hospitality and entertainment institutions, including the Universal Studios in Florida and SeaWorld. Well, that experience begs the question, what kind of a park will The Gathering Place actually be? Moore admits it will be a far different experience than those mentioned entertainment megaparks, and that the exact experience is yet to be precisely charted. But the visitor experience at The Gathering Place will be a key focal point of his work. In addition to planning the future programming at The Gathering Place, Moore will also oversee the operations of Guthrie Green as well. Tony Moore joins me today to discuss how Tulsans will likely use the completed Gathering Place when construction is finished in late 2017. Tony Moore, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And congratulations on being the new park director for this new amazing park. What attracted you to this particular position?
Well, prior to coming here, I was in Tampa working at Tampa's Lowry Park Zoo, and I was the chief operating officer there. And quite frankly, I was quite content. Not content, but we had a great group there, and I was good. And actually, I got a call. So obviously, with such a call, the question there is, where is this? And I certainly was intrigued by the description and the content, and I went online and looked. And once I saw the map and the layout and the content and everything that was going to be there, I really was intrigued. But then, gotta tell you, being in Florida, the tourist mecca between Orlando and Tampa, and then realizing that there's a park in Oklahoma, it's not the first thing that comes to mind destination-wise. So it took a little bit of a seek first to understand. And once I came to Tulsa and saw Tulsa and understood a little bit more about Tulsa and what the city had to offer, it was a pretty easy decision after that.
Just your appointment as this position sort of makes a statement about what this park is going to be. And the whole thing is, we've seen parts of the vision as the Kaiser Foundation began talking about how they wanted to transform this area. And people have got a sort of a sense of what it is, but your appointment sort of tells us this is going to be something even bigger than probably most people thought, because your experience is with Universal and SeaWorld and Lowry Park Zoo. That says this is going to be heavily entertainment focused in some way or another.
Certainly, certainly.
And so what do you see the role of park director as far as facilitating programming being for this new park?
So just to go back to your earlier statement, for someone in a destination market to leave to come to what's not yet a destination market, it obviously takes something quite significant. And so you're spot on. The magnitude of this park, I think folks will be surprised once it's open and understand the depth of the dimensions and how well built it will be. And then the content and the programming will be quite significant. And so this park potentially has the ability to really redefine Tulsa from a destination point of view. We're hoping that folks within a day's drive from all the neighboring states will come and visit and will come and enjoy this. And mark you, this is a park for Tulsa, but it certainly has the pedigree to be a destination draw. So to go back to your question now, in that where do I see content and programming going for this? You know, I think there's two ways to classify this park. The structure and the aesthetics of the park in terms of the buildings and the facilities and the boathouse restaurant and the lodge, and it's going to be quite remarkable when you walk in. The designer, and it's designed through a world-renowned landscape architect, Michael Van Valkenbaugh, and he's well-known for a lot of premium, well-done projects, and so this will be no exception. Quite frankly, I think this will even reestablish him in a very strong light and elevate and expose his product to a lot of folks who have never really had a chance to see it. But in addition to the physicality of it is the content. And so the programming is going to be significant. If you remember, Rich, part of the George Kaiser Family Foundation objective is to make this park a gathering place for all Tulsans, of all demographic, of all age, of all economic backgrounds. And so the content has to be diverse enough to attract and to be enticing to all those different needs. And so it won't be a singular type of programming. It will be very diversified to meet the different demographics and diversified in content and diversified in a type of categories, whether it's arts or music or festivals or learning or education, which is a major part of it, or horticulture and landscaping. There's so many different parts of it. I'd be lying if I said we have it all figured out. We don't, but we certainly are in the process. You know, we have, I think, 58 months to soft opening. And so timeline's on us, but we're heavy at work. We're fast at work.
Realizing this vision of a gathering place for all Tulsa, it's quite a challenge because I can't think of very many places in the city. I'm sure as you're exploring the city, you're seeing there's not a whole lot of places that have that sort of broad demographic, socioeconomic, ethnic sort of attachment. You know,
certainly.
I mean, many of our socioeconomic groups and ethnic groups, there are places they go, but others don't come to those particular places. How do you bring the whole city together through a park like this?
And so well said, and it's a tall order. And to be quite frank, if you were designing a facility or location with the expectation that you're going to draw all demographics, certainly one would cite that as a flawed strategy because you certainly can't reach everyone with the same with one universal, I call it the silver bullet, won't reach at all. So it will take a very strategic approach. How you market to our Hispanic community is going to be different than how you market to the African-American community and how you market to the First Nation community. And so we will, this won't be a shotgun approach. It'll be more like a rifle, very strategic, and go into the communities and having the type of content that's of value to them. And so just imagine the programming calendar strategically positioned with content and programming that appeals to each demographic. So, and that's important on the initial onset to give everyone a chance to come out to see it. There'll be some that will just be drawn by the sheer content and just, you know, I call it tire kickers that will just want to see what it's all about. And we welcome that. And it's important for us to have a strong opening because the word of mouth that will go out after that is significant in generating visitations thereafter. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. And the foundation understands that fullheartedly and will put some resources and expertise around getting to the right folks. And really, it's about being authentic as well, because anything that's everything to everyone sometimes loses its character.
There's nothing to anybody.
That's right. That's well said. Well said. We are figuring that out. But, you know, if you look back at the model, they are programming and events that are specific for each. So it's a matter of reproducing that and not necessarily inventing the wheel, but marrying the park with the type of content that will draw for each. And, you know, and part of the mission behind this park is maybe it sounds a little cliche to say a sense of harmony, but it certainly is, especially at a time like this. But it's the gathering place where Tulsans and community folks can come and relax in an environment that's also greenscape. It's very relaxing environmentally. It will have the sense of an escape with a lot of trees and also a lot of programming. The kids will have an area called Adventure Park where it's a 5-acre area filled with slides and towers and interactive and learning through play. And so you may have heard me say this before. That area alone, I could put a turnstile on it and charge admission and have a very profitable business. But it just speaks to the amount of content that, Gestava and the George Kaiser Foundation wanted to include.
Earlier, you mentioned something about as you were seeing the site and seeing the care taken in construction. And when you said that, there was something that made me think of maybe some of your previous experiences, like at SeaWorld or at a Universal, where there is the guest version of the park, and then yet there's this whole infrastructure underneath it that is unseen. Is the park as you construct it sort of have that sort of two-tiered situation?
It does. And, back up just a little bit in saying that. Typically, when a park's being built, the operator is at the table from drawing, ensuring that the product is going to be consumer-friendly. It's not just a theoretical design that looks beautiful, but it's functional. And many times the designers, because they're so focused on the craft of designing, they miss the functionality part. And so initially I was a little concerned in saying, you know, how much operational input has been with the program so far. And I give Gestava a lot of credit because he's done a phenomenal job in that regard. So to answer your question, in seeing the site and seeing the construction and seeing what's happening, two things I'll say. One, I've been around a lot of multi-million dollar construction projects, and this is no less. The quality that goes into it from the rock formation. A quick example is there's an area in the boathouse that on the outside exterior wall that has stacked stones, aesthetically beautiful to look at, Oklahoma stones and rocks. And easily that could have been a concrete wall with a stone facade over it. We'll visually have the same effect, but the foundation along with our architect chose to make this a quality statement and use authentic stones throughout the entire construction of it. It may seem simple, but it makes a statement of quality in that quality wasn't being compromised with the construction and the formation and the development and the design of this park. And so I've been around a lot of multi-million dollar construction, and this is nothing less. It was quite impressive to see the discipline that went into it from a quality point of view. And so even if you go online, you'll see our maintenance facility. I think it's listed as the safest place in Tulsa. It's literally a bunker, and it'll be covered by earth and well-built, well-constructed. And so once you walk and you see, you understand the magnitude of the park being built. There's a lot of awesome parks around, but certainly Tulsa has gone out of their way to do this right.
And it sounds like you have that sort of theme park mentality of all the service requirements is sort of outside of the view of the visitor, so the visitor has full roaming of the park.
Absolutely, and I can't take full credit for that because that was from the initial onset, but simple transitions such as the food after it's being prepared and you need to take it to the facility, you don't walk along the same path where the guests are. You know, it's an underground passage that take you there, so it's seamless. So there's a lot of purposeful consideration that went in to make this a world-class operation and separating the behind-the-scene functions from the front of house. You know, I always have to constantly tell myself, this is not a theme park. It's a park with theming, but it's not a theme park. And so public parks operate differently from a theme park in that it's convenient access. It's not controlled entry. It's not a turnstile. It's easy access to get in from where you are. A sense of convenience is greater than the sense of control with a paid experience, you know. But when you walk in and you look around, the quality of it will draw a lot of parallels to these big theme parks.
I like the fact that you say it's a park with thematic materials. And really, I guess part of your job over the next 17, 18, 19 months until this opens is to start sort of develop some of those thematic elements. Some of them are given to you within the course of the design. But as you look at this park begin to take shape, what comes to mind is for things that experiences that you can add through, I assume, yourself and I guess some small curatorial staff that will be interacting with visitors.
So for a guy like me coming in now, it's like a kid in a candy store. And I'm looking at every aspect of it. And so there's two functions to that. One, there is what I call operational integrity, where I have to look and say, okay, this is how it's being built. How does it operate? How does it work? How does the guest interface with this? And that's the more functional, operational side of it. The other side is, wow, how can I improve this? And what could we do from a theming point of view? You know, to be quite frank, there's not a lot, and I'm a little jealous and disappointed of that, a lot of theming side still left because those guys did such a great job off it. But wherever I have an opportunity to add a little touch here and there, I certainly will jump on it. And you know, you don't want the new guy coming in, hey, change everything. but certainly I'm finding a way to complement what's there. And there's still a lot of opportunities, so I'm looking over shoulders and asking questions and trying to change where it makes sense. But again, it just speaks to the design that the landscape architect did and the team here prior to me getting here. So, yeah, I'm welcoming those opportunities where they are, but so much has been done.
Well, of course, the overall design is to be done in phases, too. So you have phase two and phase three down the
road.
That's
correct. That's absolutely correct. Yeah, 66, I think almost 67 acres will be in phase one, and we'll ultimately end up with 100 acres. And a lot, there's still some opportunities from a content selection that I'm hoping to be at the table to help to influence, but they're in good hands even before I got here.
My guest today is Tony Moore, the new park director for The Gathering Place. The Gathering Place, scheduled to open in the fall or at the end of 2017, so that's a little over a year from now. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa as he moves into the work of The Gathering Place. And when you actually saw the site, what perhaps caught your eye the most? You mentioned the playground as being one of those areas, that five-acre playground. But what was another area that said, wow, this is something we can really do X or Y with?
Sure, sure. So right now, if you look at the site, it's primarily dirt. So when I look at it via the video cam, it was all dirt. It was just trucks moving dirt around, right?
Right.
Not a whole lot to see then. So I then went back to the master plan and looked at the layout and the design of the park. It has so many unique features, I will say. A few areas, though, that caught my eye and I think will be quite iconic. Riverview. That travels along and will travel through the park and towards the city. There are tunnels designed, land bridges over the tunnels.
Over Riverside,
correct. Mm-hmm. And so you have that through path from a traffic point of view. Those tunnels, I think, are so iconic. And if you haven't seen it, you should go online in the design with a very Europeanist flair to it. And I think that will become one of the defining features for the park.
So it's really almost a feature for a driver driving.
It really
through.
Is. It really is. It's a sense of arrival, really. And so I could see Tulsans or visitors wanting to see this tunnel and drive through the tunnel. And it's done in two banks, actually. And once you see it, you recognize you've arrived somewhere special. And the design is going to be so timeless that 20, 30, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, and we're gone, it will still be a statement to say, wow, this is a cool tunnel that defines the experience and defines the location as well. In addition to that, one of my favorite areas of the park is going to be the boathouse. And where geographically it's located in an area that will give you an awesome vista of the park from several angles. It's built with a lot of glass and a lot of stone, and so it will have a very contemporary open feel. And it's also surrounded by water, thus the name of the boathouse, where you can canoe or kayak. And I just think that space is going to be a very cool space that a lot of Tulsans, a lot of visitors will want to go and look out and reflect and say, wow, we really have an awesome park here, you know? To answer your question, those are just two locations that I just think will be stellar.
How important is the rebuilding of Zinc Dam and really creating an impoundment behind the Zinc Dam for water in the river? Because, you know, it's not in the park per se, but it's borders the park.
Certainly.
How important is that, do you think?
You know, water is a huge attribute, and you know, back in the day, villages started around water, settlements started around water.
They were highways.
It's a source of life and entertainment, and so I think the river will play that function, the Arkansas River will play that function exactly. You know, it may not be from a debt point of view right now where we want it to be, but part of the plan with this project is that it will be raised about 3 feet, and we're certainly planning to have some water recreation activities around. I think once that becomes more robust, the water experience is going to be significant. And this is just my projection on this. I think the water side will evolve into an attraction of its own. You know, once it starts to develop, I think there'll be a more planned approach around water and making it a more substantial part of the experience. You know, the river, the park is a park on the river.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things the designers, when they were coming up with this plan, was they wanted this to be a four-season park, not just a spring, summer, and fall park, which I would have to say most of our existing parks are, you know, not very utilized in the winter. How, as a park director, are you going to make that four-season park come true? Is there something about your space as you have it or your programming side that will make this a four-season park?
You know, so I'm speaking without knowledge on this one because I've yet to spend a winter here. And to your point earlier, I hope that we continue to have nice winters. But, you know, weather is a thing that will decide whether folks leave the house or not. And so on the mild winter days, you know, we know our visitors will come out and see. In fact, they'll want to be out in the open to enjoy. But, you know, weather is going to be a challenge, no question, whether it's rain or snow. It's going to be a challenge. We have a fair amount of temperature control areas, but not enough to hold the entire park. You know, this is not an indoor park. This is an outdoor park. And so I think we're going to do a lot of learning in that regard. That's one of the things that I'm anxious to go through. I've never said this before, but I'm anxious to go through this winter to get my learning so we can have some applied knowledge to put on our winter programming and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge because it's primarily an outdoor experience. It really is.
Your experience has been in, I would assume, I don't know for sure about the Lowry Park Zoo, but I assume it's been an admission sort of experience where you have guests that, you know, you're controlling how many guests come into the park but via admission.
Certainly.
Now, is there a big learning curve in thinking about a free park, a free programming as a part of as this park experience for you?
So I will say this. While working for the SeaWorld Parks, you know, we're it's a great establishment there, but they're a for-profit company,
right.
And we do this to make money. Same with Universal, and going to the Tampa Bay, the Lowry Park Zoo, it was my first introduction to a non-for-profit institution, in which still it was very important for them to make money to cover their operating expenditures, but that whatever surplus goes back into the institution from an investment point of view, that helped me tremendously as a transition in getting here. If I left completely from a 100% for-profit to such an establishment, there would be a huge culture shock. And to be quite frank, there is still a culture shock. And so some of my first questions were, well, how are we going to make money? What are the revenue streams attached to this park? And that's just an obvious question for anyone from my background. And said, well, that's important, but you know, the number one objective here is to have a park that all Tulsans can enjoy without paying admission. And that was a major departure, but a huge regard of the function and why this park was built. And so, yeah, it was a culture shock. It still is a culture shock. There will be some revenue opportunities, but the intent here is as in similar with the zoo, that whatever revenue is made is repurposed back into infrastructure or into operating costs, where we're certainly not banking or taking away any funds from this. This is a park for Tulsans, and it will be an affordable experience in terms of even the cost of food. We certainly don't want Tulsans walking away and saying, you know, it's a beautiful park, but it's a little expensive to experience. Not at all. It's not about revenue, and I'm still going through that cultural adjustment. I'd be lying if I said, I get it, I got it, and it's not an issue. I have to constantly be reminding myself that this is not a paid experience.
Well, and when you look at the buildup for this park, when the push was being made for it, it really was built as a natural experience where, yeah, you're maybe renting a kayak or a canoe and going around, paddling around a lake. You're laying in the sun. You're having a picnic in the trees. You're watching your kids play in the park. So I'm trying to get my head around the programming element of that. I mean, can you give us a sense of what you see as the programming element of something that, in which the park is saying, okay, we're going to put on this sort of event or something like that?
Sure. Currently, we the foundation had an introduction into this business with Guthrie Green,
right.
And I got to compliment Stanton Doyle and the team there and Shannon. They did a phenomenal job in doing programming for that area.
And it's a pocket park.
It's a pocket park, indeed. Yeah. And one thing we'll have to quickly decide and figure out is the difference between programming between both facilities and the difference in the branding between both facilities. And so while Guthrie Green may be a little bit more millennial-based, a little more on the festive side, we will have to define the gathering place more from a family perspective. And so we're hiring a vice president of programming that will be tasked with that challenge.
Mm.
But to answer your question, though, programming for the gathering place is going to be a very strategical function in the type of programming that we select. And so the easy ones are, you know, how does art integrate with the park? and the type of festivals around art and culture, and how does music integrate with the park, and how does...
I should mention you do have a great lawn.
A beautiful lawn, beautiful lawn, and designed for that, such a purpose, and with electronic infrastructure that will allow us, from a speakers and from a stage and from a presentation point of view, to have programming, and so there'll be a wide diversity of programming, from music festival, fireworks, jazz festivals, food festivals, art festivals. On the physical end, a section of the park also has a lot, you know, the BMX pump park, in which kids can go and enjoy riding. And so we'll also want to, you know, BMX is huge in Tulsa, from what I'm understanding. And so we certainly want to leverage that a little bit and have the type of program in the event. So the wide content that's in the park allows us to also facilitate a wide amount of a wide range of programming.
And I assume the existing activities, although they're not going on in that part of Riverside now, is jogging, running.
Jogging, frisbee.
Biking.
Biking.
And that will all be integrated into the park as well.
It will, and we're having discussions even on the biking. So we're anticipating heavy attendance days, and so we're figuring out during those days, you know, perhaps biking will not be in the interior of the park from a safety point of view, but we certainly are in the process of considering how biking, where the bike stations are, so you can have access to the different entry points, and where do you park, and where do you go in. But yeah, all the pastimes that Tulsans enjoy, we're certainly hoping to incorporate that and give them a chance to enjoy that at the gathering place.
Well, it must be a fun job watching this thing take shape and being a part of it. In a
it way. Is. It is. It's easy to walk into an establishment after it's built, but it's even a greater sense of gratification to be a part of it from the ground up. I will say, what keeps me up at night is the responsibility and knowing that, you know, theoretically, this is all theoretical at this point. and once it's built, it will, and it's being built, and it will look as good, if not better, than we're marketing and promoting it to be, then that's where my job is, operating it and ensuring that it delivers.
You can build it, but people have to come.
They have to come, and not only will they come, they have to experience it in the manner as it was intended. And then they have to return. And so from a customer service point of view, from a guest satisfaction point of view, we have to deliver. And so hopefully we'll be talking back with you, Rich. And I was saying, hey, Rich, guess what, man? Our customer service scores are high. We're delivering. Tulsans love this park. It's more than we anticipated that it would be. And where do we go from here?
Well, Tony, we appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us. And congratulations and welcome.
Rich, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Tony Moore is the recently named new park director for The Gathering Place, now under construction along Riverside Drive. You can see how construction is progressing and learn more about the new park at agatheringplaceforTulsa.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.